Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for joining us today. And thank you to our listener, Pete, for suggesting today's case a while back. If you'd like to suggest a case, you can always do so by emailing us at keytothecase@gmail.com. That's the best way to do it, but you can also do it on Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast. We have an existing list of suggestions to work through, but we always welcome new case suggestions. And one more reminder that we'll be changing our cover art at some point this week. You should be able to see the new cover art. You'll notice that there are a lot of keys and clocks on the new cover, and this was inspired by the idea that for every crime we cover, time is ticking for the person responsible. So we wanted that theme to be represented in the cover art. All right, let's dive into today's case. Stefan Edgerton was 40 years old at the time of his murder in 2012. Stefan and his wife of 14 years, Hilda, lived in Valdosta, Georgia, where they raised their three children. They had two sons, one who was 6, the other who was 7, and then one daughter who was 13. Stefan was a hands-on dad, and his children, as they've gotten older, have participated in interviews. And what really came through was how much they looked up to their dad. And Hilda has said the children are just like Stefan. Stefan worked for WGOV 96.7 FM, a local hip-hop and R&B radio station. Stefan's on-air name was Juan Gotti. Hilda told the Valdosta Daily Times in 2014 that people would hear Stefan on the radio and tell her, he's so crazy. And she told people, yeah, that's just how he is. It was not a character he was playing. Stefan had a big personality, even being described as the life of the party. But behind the scenes, he was responsible for curating the music each night he worked. He even did an unsigned artist segment where he featured up-and-coming artists. It was a great way for these artists to get more exposure.
That's really cool. And I know it's not the same, but as an independent podcast, I know we can appreciate the service he was doing to those up-and-coming artists who maybe haven't gotten a big enough name for themselves yet.
Yes, we can definitely relate in that sense. Stefan was a musician himself. He played the piano at his church for 18 years, and he had a talented singing voice, which seemed to run in the family because all of his children have great voices, and Hilda does as well. Stefan actually said he could never be with someone who couldn't sing. So Stefan was multifaceted. Many people knew him from the radio, but Hilda explained that there were these other sides to Stefan, such as the fact that he served in the army and he was deployed to Afghanistan during his service. And throughout my research, I learned a couple of details about Stefan that just made me wonder if there was a little more going on with him at the time of his murder than what's seen on the surface. Hilda shared one of these details on the Unsolved Mysteries podcast. A couple of weeks before Stefan's murder, he came home from work at the radio station. He walked into the bedroom and Hilda could tell he was annoyed, not in a good mood, and he tossed a business card onto the bed. Hilda observed that the card was from the sheriff of a neighboring county. Hilda, of course, inquired about this and asked why he had this business card. Stefan said it wasn't that serious to him, and he told the sheriff that he had nothing to tell him. Hilda said he didn't elaborate further, so we don't know why the sheriff visited Stefan. And Hilda said Stefan did not seem fearful about the situation. He was just mad and annoyed by it. Not knowing nags at Hilda to this day because this was just 2 weeks before his murder. So could it be related, or was this just a coincidence?
Did Hilda ever contact that sheriff that had left the business card with Stefan?
You mean after his murder?
Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure. And I was going to hit on that way later on who that sheriff was. As far as I'm aware, we don't know which sheriff it was, but maybe law enforcement does.
Seems like a weird coincidence. And I'm kind of surprised Hilda didn't poke him further for, you know, why the sheriff was there to see him.
I know. I had the same thought. I was thinking, if this happened to you, there's no way we could end the conversation without me knowing why a sheriff visited you, unless you said, I can't tell you, you know, for some reason. I don't know what reason that would be, but maybe Stefan was so upset that Hilda just didn't want to push it. And everyone in this case said Stefan was not involved in criminal activity. Based on what we know about him, he didn't sound like the kind of person who would be, but I double-checked this anyway during my research and I couldn't find any criminal record related to Stefan. Stefan was scheduled to work the night of Friday, January 20th, 2012, from 6 p.m. to midnight. This shift, the last shift of the night, was still somewhat new to Stefan. He'd worked nights for about 3 months. Before he left, Stefan reminded the family that the next day, Saturday, he would be grilling at Hilda's grandma's birthday party. He told his family he loved them and walked out the door to make it to work on time. It was a rather ordinary departure. The facility where Stefan worked was shared by a few radio stations, and it was on the outskirts of Valdosta off Highway 84. There are no businesses or facilities next to the station. Across the highway, there is a business, but otherwise, it's fairly isolated. It's surrounded by fields, and then a little farther out is a wooded area. On the Unsolved Mysteries podcast, Stefan's coworker Nick, who had the shift right before Stefan, described the area as spooky. He said he did not like being there at night. The building had lights, but it wouldn't really be considered well lit. And he said overall, it just had a creepy vibe at night. When I look at the area, I can definitely see where he's coming from. And if the outside of the building is not well lit, then there wouldn't be much light at all. And that can make someone vulnerable. When Stefan arrived for his shift, he passed Nick, who was on his way out. They waved at each other, but didn't stop to talk. Stefan worked his 6-hour shift as usual. And by 11:50 p.m., he signed off for the night, turned the station to an automated system, and headed out to his car. He was the last person at the station that night. Moments after Stefan walked out of the building, a man emerged from the darkness, shot him 3 times, once in the head, twice in the stomach, and fled the scene in the direction of the wooded area around the radio station. Stefan did not die immediately. In fact, much of the information we have about his death comes from Stefan himself. After being shot, he managed to call 911. Now, parts of the 911 call were released publicly 10 years after Stefan's murder, but I had trouble finding a full clean copy of it, so I will relay what he shared in the call. But if you're interested in hearing those bits and pieces of it yourself, we'll have links in the show notes where you can get to those. Personally, I found it very difficult to listen to because we know what's to come. But at the same time, it's incredible that Stefan was able to call 911 in the first place, but to sound as coherent as he did when he sustained not just 2 shots to the stomach, but a gunshot to the head is pretty remarkable. When Stefan called 911 at 11:53 p.m., he said, quote, "I'm at the radio station, B96 on 84. I've just been shot 3 times. Come help, please," end quote. The dispatcher asked if Stefan knew the shooter, to which he replied no, and said it was a white man. Stefan shared that the shooter came from the bushes around the station and he fled to the wooded area. The man was wearing all black, a mask, and he stood at about 5'9" with a slender build. Stefan was even able to tell the dispatcher that the shooter used a .38 revolver. Certainly not every day that we're discussing a case where a victim survives long enough to call the police and provide this kind of information. The only other case we've covered where something similar happened was Rachel Hansen. And one of the most valuable pieces of information Stefan gave, and Rachel did as well, was that he didn't know the offender. Knowing that he didn't know the man, unless he was mistaken, automatically rules out his family and friends as being directly responsible.
That's a pretty wild scenario. It definitely seems like, just based on the information that you said, it definitely seems like he was targeted and that the person was waiting for him specifically.
I agree on both of those points, because it's not like where the radio station was located, someone would just be in the area,
right, exactly,
and randomly targeting someone.
Exactly, yeah.
Seems like they were there for Stefan. Stefan also indicated during his 911 call that the perpetrator did not rob him and did not speak to Stefan during the attack. And it's been reported that Stefan repeatedly said, "He ruined me and he destroyed me," on the 911 call, but I don't believe that portion of the call has actually been released. The first responders found Stefan lying on the ground, surrounded by some of his belongings, likely items that were in his hands when he walked out of the building, such as his car keys and cell phone, but also items that may have been in his pockets. There's mention of cigarettes, a small bag of what was believed to be marijuana, a phone charger, and a bag of chips. But it's not been established if these items belong to Stefan. And I'm also not sure how close they were to his body. Like the bag of chips, for example, I'm wondering if that could have just been left over from someone else. Stefan was rushed to South Georgia Medical Center in Valdosta, but he succumbed to his injuries exactly an hour after he sustained them at 12:53 a.m. This was a devastating and sudden loss for Stefan's family. When Hilda first heard the news, she thought they must have the wrong person. It couldn't be Stefan. Hilda now had to go on without her partner of many years, and their 3 children were without a father. And we'll get into how they're all doing now, 12 years since Stefan's murder, later. But Hilda felt the person intended to make sure Stefan was dead, but who could have possibly wanted to kill Stefan? Investigators searched the area around the crime scene. They brought in canine units, and these dogs tracked a scent east from where Stefan was killed to the tree line, approximately 300 yards from the radio station. So this was in the direction Stefan indicated the killer fled. According to reporting from WCTV, investigators found a Coke can, cigarette butts, and tire tracks in that area, and they made casts of the tire tracks. The dog then tracked the scent north to Highway 84, where it lost it. These discoveries painted the picture, as you suggested, Sean, that the killer was most likely lying in wait for Stefan. And if that's the case, this was certainly targeted, and the killer might have been familiar with Stefan's schedule, the schedule he'd only had for a few months. It wouldn't be that difficult for someone to become acquainted with Stefan's schedule. They would hear that he was on the radio, and if they knew what vehicle Stefan drove and where the station was, the offender could have cased the area for a couple of weeks before the murder. And that's following the line of thinking that the person did not personally know Stefan, because Stefan told the 911 dispatcher he didn't know the shooter. Of course, if Stefan got that wrong and he actually did know the person but didn't realize it, they could have known his schedule because they knew him and knew that he would be working and be done by about midnight on that Friday.
I'm kind of surprised that he was very certain that he didn't recognize the person, just based on the fact that they were wearing dark clothing and they were wearing a mask. It's just a little surprising that he was so sure that he didn't know the person.
I know. When you factor in a mask, it makes it more difficult, right, to be able to tell. Right. I would think it would have to be in the eyes, though. Like, yeah. If you look this man in the eyes and did not recognize him, I just think that would be have to be how he made that determination. Or maybe the mask that we're envisioning did not cover as much of his face as we're imagining. But it's been described as a ski mask, so that covers most of your face. The investigating agency, the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office, operated under the assumption that the killer parked their car near kind of where they found the items and the tire tracks and walked to kill Stefan, or someone, basically a getaway driver, was parked there waiting for him and they drove off together. So there could be more than one person involved in this. There were no witnesses to Stefan's murder, which is unsurprising given the location I described earlier, but also the time of night. Although the radio facility was equipped with cameras, they were merely dummy cameras with the purpose of creating the illusion that the facility was under surveillance. I'm curious how visible these cameras were, because the average person wouldn't know these were non-functional cameras. Some employees were even unaware that the cameras didn't work. So are we talking about someone who knows this facility, or were they completely unaware of these cameras? Maybe they weren't that obvious, but the whole point of fake cameras is that they're visible and can act as a deterrent to potential wrongdoers. So with a lack of witnesses of the actual murder, law enforcement turned to people who may have seen a vehicle in the area or any suspicious activity around the time of the murder. A truck driver reported to law enforcement that he saw a small car with large rims pass him at a high rate of speed around the time of Stefan's murder, about a mile from the crime scene on Highway 84. Recall, the radio station is off Highway 84. At the time, there were traffic cameras in the area where the car was seen, but they weren't set up to record. So this was a dead end.
It's very frustrating that there are all these cameras around that could have helped the case and none of them work. So
But they were all useless, basically. Yeah. And they never determined who drove the vehicle or even the make of the car. So it could be that this was the killer, but it's also possible that this was someone else driving who had nothing to do with the murder. The sighting would feel more significant if the truck driver saw this car leaving the scene rather than just driving on Highway 84, but it's still important to consider. If a suspect came up and they were known to drive a small vehicle with large rims at the time, okay, that's worth noting. And I will say, from what I could find, the truck driver didn't see the car leave the radio station, but it's possible that he did, and that information just hasn't been confirmed with the public.
So did anything come out of the cast of the tire tracks that the police made? Were they able to determine, you know, pretty much anything related to the cast of the tire tracks, like the type of tire, you know, the width of the vehicle, anything like that?
I would hope they were able to get some good information from the cast they took, but they haven't released what they found. And the other thing is, if they come up with a suspect now and they want to compare the tire tracks they found near the scene to the tire tracks of the vehicle driven by the suspect at the time of the murder, who's to say if that suspect would even have the same car? But they certainly wouldn't have the same tires, right? Most people don't keep their tires for 12 years. So law enforcement went down several different investigative avenues. One possibility that was ruled out quickly was that robbery was the motive. Matt Howard, an investigator working Stefan's murder, told the Unsolved Mysteries podcast that Stefan told the 911 dispatcher that the shooter didn't steal anything from him. Stefan had a little less than $100 on his person when he was killed, and he had more than $100 in his car. We also know that Stefan said his killer didn't say anything to him. If someone were trying to rob him, you'd think they would tell him what they wanted. So with robbery being ruled out as the motive, law enforcement explored Stefan's life in depth. A theory emerged that a drug dealer who went by White Boy could have been behind Stefan's murder. White Boy was a light-skinned black man, but his street name was White Boy. There were rumors that Stefan was involved with White Boy's girlfriend, and law enforcement became aware of this through an anonymous tip. The theory was that White Boy killed Stefan to get him out of the picture. Law enforcement interviewed White Boy's girlfriend, and she denied having a relationship with Stefan or even knowing him other than hearing him on the radio. With this murder taking place in 2012, this rumor should be easily proven or disproven because there should have been a digital trace of it. The investigators had access to Stefan's cell phone records, so there likely would have been texts, phone calls, or social media interactions. I think Facebook and Twitter were most popular back then, between Stefan and White Boy's girlfriend, if they really were seeing each other. Now, Ashley Polk is the current sheriff in Lowndes County where Stefan was murdered. He was not the sheriff at the time of Stefan's murder. He told WCTV in 2021 that Stefan had common friends, including women, with White Boy. I'm not sure what clear evidence there is that they had a connection because Matt Howard, the investigator on this case, who I mentioned earlier, has indicated that they had no leads that brought them to White Boy other than the rumor that Stefan was involved with White Boy's girlfriend. Sheriff Polk also said that Stefan referred to his killer as White Boy during his 911 call. However, in the clips that have circulated of the 911 call, Stefan clearly states the shooter is a white man. He did not use the term white boy. Stefan says a white man. If he were trying to reference white boy, he probably would have said it was White Boy. I think the difference between man and boy is significant here. Additionally, Stefan said he did not know the perpetrator. So if the theory is that he was familiar with White Boy, this goes against that as well. You could make the argument that Stefan sustained 3 gunshots, including 1 to the head. So maybe he wasn't completely coherent, which is likely true. But in the 911 call, he sounded surprisingly coherent for someone who just sustained 3 gunshots. He managed to listen to the questions asked by the dispatcher and answer them in such a way that demonstrated he understood the questions. Hilda felt confident that Stefan meant what he said in the call. And when he said a white man he didn't know shot him, she believes a white man he didn't know shot him.
Yeah, I agree. We paused for a second, you played the clip, and it's obvious that he says it was a white man. He doesn't reference White Boy at all. You know, it's kind of surprising that the sheriff would say he said White Boy. I don't know, maybe they have a current case that they're trying to build against White Boy, and you know, they're just trying to use this as more ammo or something. I don't know why he would reference White Boy when it was so clear that Stefan said it was a white man. You know, I agree that's a pretty significant difference between boy and man in this specific scenario.
In my opinion, it seems like the sheriff is pretty on board with this White Boy theory, but that the investigators with the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office aren't as much. Because even in this one interview they all did with WCTV in 2021, the sheriff seems like White Boy's a pretty good suspect, but then the other investigator who was interviewed is saying or made comments that made it sound like they didn't have anything really to point to White Boy. According to Unsolved Mysteries, Hilda got in touch with several people who were in White Boy's circle, and they told her that White Boy could be upset all day long, but he wasn't the type to just murder someone. One family member of White Boy warned Hilda that it looked like the sheriff's office just wanted to pin the murder on someone. And you were saying you're wondering if they want to build a case against him on something, but White Boy was shot to death in a drug-related homicide a few years after Stefan's murder in Brooks County, the county that borders Lowndes County to the west. So if White Boy had anything to do with Stefan's murder, he will never be able to share that information. Additionally, the sheriff's office never compared White Boy's DNA to any possible DNA samples they collected from the crime scene. According to WCTV, in that same interview I just mentioned, they never had enough evidence to collect DNA from White Boy to do that comparison. That is just another indicator that this is a pretty flimsy theory. When investigators reviewed Stefan's cell phone activity leading up to his murder, they made an interesting discovery that could lend credibility to the theory that Stefan was involved with another woman, not White Boy's girlfriend, but possibly someone else. The investigators found a phone call that lasted for longer than an hour and a half the night of Stefan's murder while he was at work. All we know about the individual who spoke with Stefan is that it was a woman who lived in Douglas, Georgia. So we don't know her name or anything about her, and neither does Hilda. Only the investigators have that information. And Douglas is a little more than an hour's drive away from Valdosta. I had a thought that this could have been someone from Stefan's hometown of Waycross, Georgia, but Douglas is about a 45-minute drive away from Waycross, so that theory doesn't really hold up. And Hilda told Unsolved Mysteries that although she knows nothing about this woman, law enforcement told her that there was no evidence that this woman, was connected to Stefan's murder. I have to say, well, for anyone who's new here, Sean and I are a couple. We are actually engaged. But if I found out you had an hour and a half long phone call with a random woman, I think I would be upset. It would be suspicious for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd feel the same if the roles were reversed. Absolutely.
And Hilda has expressed some confusion about this phone call, but she hasn't said if she has a sense or a guess as to who Stefan could have been speaking with that night. She doesn't seem like she has a clue. It's not as though she heard, oh, he was speaking with someone in Georgia, or sorry, someone in Douglas, Georgia, and she knew right away who that was. It seemed like this was a surprise to her too. So I don't want to make assumptions because we don't know what this phone call was about, but it certainly raises an eyebrow, I think, especially because we just don't know who she was. The police haven't revealed that. And the time of night too, when they were having this phone call. So Hilda has to just trust law enforcement and that they investigated this woman and ruled out the possibility that she could have been involved in Stefan's murder in some way. Clearly, this woman couldn't have committed the murder, but if Stefan was involved with her, romantically or otherwise, what reason would she have to hire someone to kill him? But the theory that the shooter is hired to kill Stefan would explain why he said he didn't know the man. But let's come back to that one later, because Stefan's coworker and friend, Nick, shared some interesting information about the radio station. Nick explained that there was not a good working environment at the radio station, and he suspected the owner of the station might know more about Stefan's murder than she let on. After his murder, Nick said she was elusive. She didn't want to come to the radio station. Nick's position was that one of your employees was just murdered. Wouldn't you want to make sure the rest of your staff is okay? Maybe put up security cameras or take other steps to improve the security and the safety of everyone at the station. I know real surveillance cameras were eventually installed, but I'm not sure exactly when they went in. So Nick was frustrated with the owner, but further compounding the issue, after Nick stopped working at the radio station, he heard that she told people that he may have had a hand in Stefan's murder, and she was throwing other names out there. He, and it sounded like others who worked at the station, saw her finger pointing as possible deflection. But I was unable to find any theory explaining why she would be involved in Stefan's murder. And to my knowledge, there's no evidence that she was, only strange behavior from her. Nick certainly shared important information. The owner would presumably be aware of Stefan's schedule and the facility, but without much more information, it's hard to put any weight on her possibly being involved.
I mean, obviously, we don't know the full dynamics of their relationship, but just, you know, in what scenario do you go so far as to hire a hitman to murder someone?
Right. You would think, I would think there'd have to be way more to this story that, you know, we don't know about for that to be the case. I feel like there would be known issues between Stefan and this owner for that to be the next step she took. And from what I could find, there weren't documented issues between Stefan and the owner. But again, it's another one of those things that the sheriff's office could be keeping under wraps. And there's also mention of the general manager. Now, I don't think the general manager is the same person as the owner, but the general manager actually set up a trailer on the property of the radio station after the murder, and she lived there. So she seemed to ramp up the security. She was living there. I mean, that sounds completely different from what the owner was doing. Also related to Stefan's work, sometimes musicians grew frustrated when Stefan or other 96.7 DJs chose not to play their music. But again, there was never a connection made between any of those musicians and Stefan's murder. I've seen some people question if Stefan's murder could have been a case of mistaken identity. It seems the best way to investigate that theory would be to look into others who worked at the radio station who had a similar appearance to Stefan, if there was anyone who did, or the person who used to work the 6 p.m. to 12 shift. Could someone else who worked at the station have had someone who was out for him and the killer mistook Stefan as that person? And I just point out the 6 to 12 shift thing, because Stefan had been in that shift for about 3 months. So the person who had it before, is there a possibility that they were targeted and the killer just didn't know that that person didn't work that shift anymore? I think the theory appeals to some, this mistaken identity theory, because there's no clear answer in this case. It doesn't appear that Stefan had any enemies. He was very well liked, and he said he didn't know the person who shot him. So could this have all been a big mistake? It's possible, but law enforcement has never shared if this theory has any credence. I'd also think, I could be wrong, that the killer might have been familiar with the person's car they were targeting, and Stefan's car would have been the only one at the facility. So you'd think that could have tipped the shooter off that they didn't have the right person.
I don't think the mistaken identity theory holds much weight at all. I mean, he's had this, like you said, he's had this shift for the past 3 months. If I'm sure whoever was targeting him, not him, but whoever was targeting, if it was mistaken identity, you know, in order to get pretty good surveillance, they would just listen to the radio station at that time of night and hear when they were signing off. And if he's been doing this job for the past 3 months, you know, it's pretty difficult for that to be plausible.
I agree. It would be pretty easy to just tune into the radio. You don't even have to go to the radio station to see if the person's there. All you have to do is listen to the radio and see who's hosting that night. So I agree. I think it would have been easy for a killer to make sure they were getting the right person.
Unless maybe Stefan wasn't the 6 to midnight DJ every single night. Maybe they switched shifts. I'm sure he wasn't doing it, you know, 7 days a week. Maybe there was someone else who stepped in. you know, a couple of days a week and handled certain days, that I could see being a possibility.
Right. Wanting to take a closer look at this other person.
Right.
Yeah, because I don't believe Stefan was working 7 days a week. I don't know exactly how this radio station worked. So that it could be a possibility.
You know, then again, you could just listen to the radio, see who's, you know,
right.
See who's on that night.
Exactly. So tying this all back to the possibility that someone was hired or asked to kill Stefan, this is appealing because he didn't know the person. This could have been a complete stranger to him. But again, who would be the driving force behind this? And unrelated to this, I couldn't help but wonder if that visit from the sheriff from a neighboring county that I told you about in the beginning had anything to do with this.
I'm still thinking about that, to be honest.
Yeah, I want to know if the investigators were able to determine what that was about. Surely, if the sheriff didn't reach out to Lowndes County investigators himself after presumably hearing the news, then the investigators could have contacted the sheriff's departments from the neighboring counties to find out what this was about. You would think if they contacted each sheriff from the neighboring counties that the one who spoke to Stefan would remember that incident. It just seems with it being 2 weeks before his murder, they should have had memory of this, but also notes of that meeting, I would assume, or record of it. Could someone have been worried that Stefan was going to share information that would harm them? Who's to say, since Stefan shared very little information with Hilda about this visit from the sheriff, and we know he told Hilda that he told the sheriff he had nothing to say. So if someone thought Stefan was going to say something about what, I have no idea because he wasn't involved in anything that we know of. Stefan had no intention of spilling any information. The timing feels relevant, though, considering that the visit was just a couple of weeks before Stefan's murder.
Yeah, I wish that there was more information regarding this visit. To me, it just seems like too much of a coincidence for it not to be related.
I know. I think there's a strong possibility that whatever the sheriff visited Stefan about could be related to his murder, but without any more information, it's just a suspicion. But I also think hopefully law enforcement could have figured this out, figured out what that visit was about, and maybe they derived a suspect from that. Maybe they didn't, or maybe they haven't figured it out. We don't know, but yeah, like it's just a suspicion.
Yeah. I mean, how would they even know that specific sheriff's department? Since you said it was a different sheriff's department, they may not have even known about that visit.
Well, Hilda told them. So I'm thinking after Hilda shared that with them, they could have called around to the other sheriff's offices in the area and asked if anyone visited Stefan or had any record of visiting Stefan. And that's the other interesting part here. Like, what was going on in another county that Stefan may have been questioned about because he had information?
Yeah, that could be tied to the hour and a half long phone call he had with that woman, right? Because that was...
That, I believe, was in another county. Let me double check that. Yes, Douglas, Georgia is in Coffee County, not Lowndes County, where Valdosta is. To be completely transparent, I have no clue what happened to Stefan. I've said this in other cases, but there are cases I research where I have a strong theory and others, such as this one, where I don't feel confident in any theory we've discussed. I don't think this theory that white boy was involved is a strong one. I don't really think mistaken identity is a strong theory. So that's my opinion on those, but otherwise I have no idea. So if you all listening have any thoughts here, definitely feel free to share them with us. Hilda moved away from Valdosta, and about 8 years after Stefan's murder, Hilda got engaged to another man. Despite the new relationship, she has continued to participate in interviews about Stefan, and she wants to see justice just as much as she did in 2012, and the kids do too. Hilda told Valdosta today that the kids say that no matter how old they are or how much time has passed, they want answers, but they have all gone on to be successful young people. Stefan and Hilda's daughter, Mia, is now 25, married with one child, and on her way to earning a neuroscience PhD. Stefan and Hilda's son, Christian, is 19 now. He's a star football player. And their son, Winston, is 18, and he's a talented tuba player. They really are impressive young people, and it's just a shame that Stefan didn't get to see them grow up beyond the ages of 6, 7, and 12, the ages they were when he died. But it's clear he would be proud of each of his children if he were here today. If you have information related to the murder of Stefan Edgerton, please contact the Lowndes County Sheriff's Office at 229-671-2900. You can also submit a tip anonymously on their website, loundssheriff.com. Thank you so much for listening today and supporting the show, and therefore supporting the search for justice for every victim we discuss. That is all for now, but we will be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.